make some conversations regarding some difficult things that have happened to me. And I've made this comment a few times about having things in life that come up that sometimes we get a few strikes and we kind of make an analogy to baseball, at least I do. I didn't realize how often people use this idea of three strikes and you're out, but we're going to be talking a little bit about baseball today, but also just about the situations that we face in life and how we contend with them. So we'll go ahead and jump in, and before I speak too much on it, I will tell you that there are a few things in here. Some of the imagery I have is maybe a little bit disconcerting, but I tried to make sure that it wasn't too distressing. So I was looking at the different ways that we use the word three, because it seems like it's all around us. Every day that we typically deal with things, there's three. And I thought some interesting things I found online of things I hadn't really thought about, but there's three dimensions. As human beings, if you work on a 3D application, you typically work with the X, Y, Z axis. For me, I do 3D rendering sometimes, and so an X axis is typically across, the Y is vertical, and then the Z is the depth, how far you are from me. Our eyes are built that way. Everything that we see is in three dimensions, and that's the way that God's created us. Why do those doors back there, why do they only seem to be about 3 inches tall to me? Well, that's because the way that my eyes perceive them and the distance they are from them, that's how they look. Just very interesting. So that's one of the things that we see with three. Trichromacy. Big word, but for some of the younger people today, maybe all they know is a flat screen, like what's up behind me. So they don't really understand what a CRT is, like many of us grew up in using in the past 20 years. But even televisions, in the most cases, use three colors. And I could probably ask you, what are the three colors that most computers see? And most of you that have any understanding of computers will say, well, they see red, green, and blue. And just those three colors. But how do we see all this color around us? Our eyes are able to pick up those three channels. And so all of our computers, all of our monitors are built around those three things. And that's a mixture of those. When you take red, green, and blue and make 100% of it, you have black. You take it away and you end up with white. Another thing that we use the word three is the Trinity, getting into some religious thought here. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit we talk about often. The patriarchs, you go back into the Old Testament, I hadn't really put this together with the use of threes, but whenever we talk about the patriarchs, we always talk about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, it wasn't just the three of them, there were more patriarchs, but we always go back to those three because these three were the direct recipients of the promises of God. We talk about Jonah and the whale's belly most of the time when we're referring to Jesus as the analogy. We go back to sports, football games. When you kick a field goal, it's worth 3 points. Bowling, if you get three strikes, and I have to, those of you that don't know what bowling is, it seems like all the bowling alleys are going away. So if you don't know what it is, I can explain the game to you. But those of us that have bowled before, we understand that if you get three strikes in a row, it's considered a turkey, even though they'll keep calling it a turkey and if you keep getting strikes. Wrestling. My son was a wrestler for a little while. Didn't really enjoy it very much. It was a lot of waiting around, but if you pin somebody for a count of 3 seconds, that is what the end of the game is for. That's the objective for anybody wrestling. If they can hold down their opponent in a stationary position and they can't move with their shoulders to the mat, that's considered a pin, and that would give the win to the other person holding them down. A triathlon. A lot of us have been held up by traffic on 73 when we go by Caesars Creek in the morning, sometimes on our way to church. What do they do in a triathlon? Well, as we know, tri means three. So you have an event that's swimming, you have an event that's bicycling, and you have an event that's running. A triangle, another simple thing, but just another use of three. A couple passages that we can look at the word three in Scripture. 1 Samuel 3:8 says, "The Lord called Samuel again the third time. So he arose and went to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you did call me.' Then Eli perceived that the Lord had called the boy." Remember what happened those other two times. And keep this in mind in the back of your head there. We're talking about three strikes is all you're going to get. But up to that point, everything's sort of okay. Remember the first two times that Samuel went to Eli, he's like, I didn't call you. Go back to sleep. I don't know what's going on. But this third time was more impactful. Mark chapter 14, starting with verse 39, says, "Again he went away and prayed." We talk about this in class today. "And he spoke the same words. And when he returned, he found them," talking about the disciples that were with him, "sleeping again, for their eyes were heavy, and they did not know what to answer him." Then he came the third time and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let's be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. So this idea keeps going back to that idea of baseball. First strike, not a real big deal, but it's a problem. Second strike, more of a problem, but you still have a chance to get the hit. But what if you get three strikes? That's all you get. And that's kind of what we see as we go through here. So the number three, in life we humans put a lot of value in it, as I talked about earlier in the number three, especially regarding the safety and penalties. I like this one. I dealt with my mom doing this a lot of times. My dad usually didn't count down. He just dealt with things if they got out of control. But how many of people, I've even heard members at this congregation doing this when the kids are young, if they're getting a little bit too anxious, maybe they've been hanging around Roger too much and they're just all amped up and they're like, oh, Roger's got to stop it. Maybe one day I'm going to get a count of 1, 2, 3. Well, what does that mean? Why would you go to a child and say 1, 2, and it's like everything is scary at that moment. It's like, okay, I have to stop doing what I'm doing because mom's counting to 3. And if she gets to 3, I'm in trouble. I'm going to have this happen. I may stand in the corner. I may get something taken away. I may not be allowed to do something. 1 and 2 are not that important to that child. But if mom or dad gets to 3, something is going to happen. So this idea continues. Until number 3, what happens? This is something taking me back to my childhood. Mom might remember that. Some of you older people that were in school may remember this. I don't know many people that have ever heard of this, but when I was in elementary school, back in the back of our classroom, we had these little folders. They're little tiny folders. They were probably made for index cards. And inside each one of those folders was 3 strips. And everybody had their names, so my name would have been written right on the front of that, Roger. My friend, all my friends in class would have had their names written on that. But there are 3 strips. And if I ever got out of hand or had done something that caused the teacher to be dissatisfied with me, she said, Roger, I'm pulling a strip. And she'd go over there and pull that strip. And then I was down to 2. And I was like, oh, no, I've only got 2 left. Well, if I was in an especially troublesome mood and I wouldn't stop or I was having fun doing whatever I was doing, she may say, I'm taking another one and pull that. If she got to that third strip, and again, like we're talking about, strips 1 and 2 are a problem for me. But as long as she didn't take that third strip, I'm okay. But if I lost that third strip, I would have detention. And it's been so many years, I don't even remember if we had detention in elementary school. But I know that there were a lot of kids in class, and I probably was from time to time, one that had my strips removed. Hands, does anybody have any experience with strips in school? I'm the only one. Okay, so Vandalia did this and nobody else. So that's what happened. So we go through this. 3 strips equal detention, but until the third strip is removed, nothing happens. I'm warned, but no penalty is served. And I put that asterisk on there because I knew that was probably going to be the case today. Most kids these days have no idea what classroom strips are at school, so we'll just keep on going. The number 3. In life, we humans put a lot of value in the number 3, especially regarding safety or penalties. So we've been talking about this already. What about baseball? And I'm sorry, I'm drying out. I'm going to have to take a break. So again, baseball, there's an awful lot of kids that have played that, male and female. Most of us have played it in our own times. I know as a family, when we got together and we go out to this place up, and I think it's, I always call it the wrong place. I think it's New or St. Paris or New something or other. I can't remember. Northampton. Thank you. But we would have the whole family out there. My aunt, my mom, my dad, my grandpa, my cousins, all of us would go out there and play softball. And it was mostly chaos, but it was pretty fun. And there were still some amazing hitters in our family. Even my brothers. I always thought I was a pretty good softball player, but when they got up and hit a ball, it was just astounding how far they could hit it. But when a baseball player is playing up there, and I was just listening to a Reds game last night, not because of this lesson, but it was on there, and I was just smiling because of the similarity of the topics that were going on. A batter, no matter how good they are, can strike out one time, and it doesn't really affect them. They can strike out, or not strike out, but they can have a second strike, and it doesn't really affect them. But when they get that third strike, they go back and sit down. It doesn't matter whether they're paying $13 million a year for playing baseball. It doesn't matter why everybody recognizes them instantly, and then maybe they're on the cover of a magazine. They still go back and sit down, just like any kid in any minor league baseball game. And that's where it stops there. So the picture we're going to be talking about here just for a moment. Initially, this lesson started out on Peter's question on Christ, how many times shall I forgive my brother? Because I was thinking about these instances of chances. And I think Kyle and maybe Cody both recently talked along these lines too. Peter's question and Jesus' answer in Matthew 18 led to the idea of chances. And that's basically what strikes are. You have three chances to hit this ball, and that's all you get. So how many chances, and that's what I want to focus on today, and both lessons, and like I said, there's going to be some things to make you pay attention, maybe some things that make you a little stressed, but I want us to think about how many chances that does God grant each of us every day, me and all of you. The answer Christ gave Peter illustrates God forgives us many, many times, but how often does God intervene to save us from harm? Last bullet, I think. How often will we chance it physically and spiritually? And for all these things, I want you to try to apply two things, as I try to do in most of my lessons. See things, apply a physical, mental image in your mind, but then turn that into a spiritual application. How can this thing that Roger's showing me physically be relayed to my spiritual growth with God? We talked about so many things in class today that really go along with this lesson. I hope it continues on. This picture was actually taken last year in October. The motorcycle that I most recently got, it's exactly like the one that I bought in 2004 or 5. I think it was 2004. It's a Kawasaki ZX-12R. It's not a Harley, so those that like Harleys would probably not really care much for this. But I still think it's one of the most attractive bikes that I've ever seen. It's a bike that I wanted most of all. Why do I have that underneath Strike One? Well, most of you know the story. This story was, I'm skipping a lot of it. I tried to keep it so it wouldn't be too uncomfortable for anybody. The guys for the business meeting will smile because I have Blanchester on there because I mistakenly said that I was going to Blanchester with some people tonight for singing, and that was incorrect. It was Pisgah, and Pisgah is not on there. But what happened on Strike One, we had come out with my friend Scott. He's actually working with me now. We had gone down to around Blanchester. It was one of my favorite little rides to do. 123 on a motorcycle was one of my favorite roads to ride down to. Some of you have lived off of that area. Very beautiful, scenic, nice rolling hills, lovely place. But when we were coming back from Blanchester, I think we'd gone down and got some ice cream. We were heading back up the road there on 123. And we got to this curve on 123. Some of you might recognize this curve. Shows the direction that we were traveling there. I'm sorry, my computer is a little bit sluggish here. That's what it looked like from the roadway. I took this off of Google Maps. And it shows, as a motorcyclist, the state of Ohio has done a good job telling me there's a slight curve heading to the left up here. There's 9 signs telling me that there's a curve coming up there. And I knew it was there. Just like last time, I think the accident scene investigator said there was doing about 45 miles an hour. But I do remember, not a lot about that accident, I do remember about where that arrow is, right underneath of it, a man was cutting his grass. And I know some of you I've talked to recently about this. Ohio has gotten very serious about this. Do not cut grass and blow it out onto the road because there are motorcycles that don't do well with that, especially if they hit it and they slipped. I probably would not have slipped in my accident, but I was scared about seeing that grass in that curve. And so I hit my brakes a little bit too hard. Right on that curve, there's a little bump there between those two driveways. There's that other sign, and there's a telephone pole. After the accident, which I did go off the road, I have no memory about anything that happened after that point. I just remember seeing that grass, and that's the last thing that I remember. These are some accident pictures that show where I had my back tire locked up. If you look off to the left, you can see some grass clippings laying on there that would show where that guy was mowing the grass, but not a lot was left on there. What happened when I hit the curb, if you remember that picture I showed you, there's a slight bump right up to that telephone pole. When I hit that curb, the bottom dirt spot that you see there was most likely my front wheel turning sideways. The back of the bike turned sideways and then went straight up towards the next thing that was in the picture there, that telephone pole. The back of my bike hit that, spun around, I got thrown off of it. And remember, my buddy Scott was with me. He was right behind me watching all this happen. And so, again, I know it's distressing kind of looking at this probably for Mom more than anybody. So not only did that happen, This was over here where the telephone poles and the driveway and everything. 45 miles an hour is still enough speed for a motorcycle and a person to get thrown. I got thrown out into the driveway. My motorcycle hit that other tree and bounced off it. So just think about the number of things that I escaped there. I put down strike one, but really, that was probably 9 strikes against what could have happened to me. I can't tell you how thankful to God I am for getting out of that. And even preparing this lesson reminded me, you were being watched out for, Roger. So one of the things about baseball people focus in so often about is who made the last out. You know, a lot of times a team can play throughout the whole thing. Cincinnati, I hear this all the time, how well they did. But it always boils down to who got the last out. We had the bases loaded. We were only down by one. We could have done it. All we needed is you to hit that ball. And sometimes the person that was in that position, maybe they're normally a great hitter, but they just were so overwhelmed by that responsibility that they failed. And you've seen this happen. I love Cincinnati. They're my favorite ball team. But it's happened to them a lot this year. But a lot of us played on sports teams. You younger people may have played like this. Sometimes your teammates say, well, you got the last out. They make you feel bad because you were the last person to get the out. And it took me a while to find. I know the National Baseball League is very adamant about letting you know that NFL and Major League Baseball, neither one can have images used. So I had to find a college team there. That guy's making it. He's really reaching out there trying to make that catch. And I've seen some amazing catches to get people out. So think about these things. Sometimes a batter is out without a strike. My focus on this first lesson was about the strike, and I'm going to carry this through to the second lesson. How many times does life present something to you, and you try to do the right thing, but you miss? And again, it comes your way, and you try to do the right thing, and you miss. And it just happens a third time, and you're finally out. But you know, sometimes in this situation, I may not have anything thrown at me. I may do everything that seems to be right. Perfect connection with the ball. Hit the ball where the bat met it so well. It was the most amazing hit ever. There should have been nobody able to catch it. But then there's this one guy. He called the ball. I didn't have any strikes, but I'm out. Why does that happen? Well, again, we'll continue the thought as we get into the second lesson. So could these things be you or me? The third thing that I wanted to look at today, another of the three there, is on the third day, Christ arose. Until Christ arose, what happened? Nothing happened until the third day, right? That was part of prophecy. The first day, I mean, things happened. The second day, things happened, but they didn't affect things spiritually. But on that third day, when Christ arose, the prophecies about Jesus, even going back to the book of Genesis, remember what it said when God was being angry with Satan and angry with Adam and Eve for the sin in the garden. He said, Satan will bruise your heel, but he will crush his head. Prophecies, I believe most of us understand, talking about what Jesus eventually would do to Satan's reign here on earth. In 2 Peter 3, 9 through 11, talking about life without warning, and again, this is a continuation, not the strikes that we miss, but about those times that we get outs and we don't expect to. The Lord is not slack concerning his promises, some count slackness, but is long-suffering towards us, not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. Another thing we were talking about in class today. Please be patient with me. So the day of the Lord. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, the elements will melt with fervent heat, both the earth and the works in them that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? So again, take those visual images that I presented to you. Think about baseball if you want to. Think about the things that come along our way. We talked about this, and I think class couldn't have been better today in some of the things we were talking about. What was Mike talking about? What was Cody responding to with some of his feedback, as well as others of you? Our flesh looks out at things. The only way we can see things is with our eyes. That's part of our flesh. Our hands can only touch things that we see. Again, all flesh. So the things that we see, as we talked about in class today, our spirit is in here. One of the things I drew on my my sheet for class today, and I do that often because little images of things help me retain that. I was remembering back in high school when I had a jewelry class, and I really liked jewelry. I almost went into that field, making wax models of rings and things, some of them very complicated, but I had to make them out of wax. And then once that was done, I had to make sure it looked as good as possible, and I put it into a container, and it was filled with wax. It was the almost the same thing that you use for paper mache, but it's the part that goes around there, and I've lost the name of it. But anyhow, that material would harden around there. You fill it up, pour it in there, and then it would harden around the wax. And then you would cut it open, melt the wax out of there, or you would just melt the wax out of within that container, and then you would pour your precious metal into there. It was totally what we talked about in class today. All this, we talked about the outer man is perishing. Eventually, when life is over, this body, which is made of the elements, dust of the earth, is going to be disposed of, but the spirit will remain. And the condition of that spirit is what's going to go on into eternity, either to be judged or to be rewarded in heaven. No matter how good I made that model of wax, and I put it in that porcelain, I keep wanting to call it porcelain, but that's not it. Okay, yes, plaster, thank you. They put it in that, pour that plaster inside there. No matter how well I did that, if the metal wasn't done right or that plaster wasn't good, it wouldn't come out good. One of the things that we had to do when we poured that plaster in there is we had to put it on a machine that vibrated. And the reason that vibrated like that is to get all the bubbles out of there. Because with every beautiful thing that you make in wax, there's little bubbles that form there when you pour around there. Sometimes people will take their plaster casts out and look at what they did, and there'd only be half of it there. It was broken. It was damaged. It wasn't formed properly. I was the artist. I knew how I wanted that to come out. If I didn't do things right, they wouldn't come out right. And so I'm saying all that to make a point about these passages here. God has a plan for each one of us. He wants us to be perfect. He wants us to have a good, beautiful spirit. And as we talked about, the flesh is not his concern. The flesh is a problem for us. But if we are cast properly and we take our time to get to that point, we will have value and we will be precious. So as we talked about this idea of life without warning, whether we have strikes to a certain point or whether we just get an out without a strike, it doesn't matter. We have to be prepared to be ready for that eternal place. Finishing this up, this passage has been read many times, but I don't want to think about this. The perfect manager is not about that motorcycle. I like that motorcycle, but I showed you pictures of that motorcycle damaged. Actually, we'll see it damaged again. The perfect manager can make that right again. They can fix anything. But even when you mess your ring up, God can make sure that it is precious in His sight. So think about that when we read Psalms 23, 2 through 4. He makes me lie down in the green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. And that's what I want to focus on there. He leads me in the paths of righteousness. For His name's sake, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. I was going to do a funny spin on that fact that we were talking about baseball and talking about that rod and staff, but I'll just mention that for now. But all of us will go through the shadow of death at some point in our lives. We've all seen it. Many of us have had horrible, scary things happen in our own vehicles, in a house that may be on fire, outside with friends, and something happens. One of my best friends was killed sledding, of all things, when he was very young, something that was just horrible. We all go through the valley of the shadow of death. But as we talked about in class today, this body is just a collection of material. It's what's in here. It's a person listening right now. It's a person thinking. It's a person trying to go through the things that I'm talking about and making application. And again, as we talked about in class, what are we thinking? What does our mind do that makes us that next person that will be the spiritual person that we're talking about? That's all we have for the first lesson. We'll talk about a little bit more for strike two for me, but for continuing this thought, and we'll wrap it up with some things I think that would be helpful for all of us going forward. So if you have something in your life, maybe Sometimes you've been dealing with strikes. You keep getting things thrown to you. They seem like great opportunities. You're doing what you feel is right, and nothing positive is coming out of it. Maybe you have a perfect swing. Maybe it's the perfect pitch. Everything looks like it's lined up, but you're still missing it. And we'll talk about that in the second lesson. Some of the crafty things that pitchers can do to cause us to miss. Exactly the same thing Satan does with our lives. And I was thinking about this today, too. We talk so many times about good Christians that are dealing with some catastrophic things in their lives. Why is that? Well, what better way is it to get people to be in despair than to keep picking away at their happiness in the flesh? We have to remember that we're spiritual. This flesh is all Satan's, and he will try to get to us in every way he possibly can.